On this episode of Still Loading, we try not to cry too much.
Sad.
I'm leaving all this in. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this new episode of the Still Loading Podcast. I am your host, Josh Koval, and today on the show, two first-time guests on the show, and they are here to talk about a game that is near and dear to all of us. It is a collaboration. It is a group effort. I don't know, but it's going to be a good episode nonetheless. So today on the podcast, I have Jerrica and Kayla from the JK Games Podcast to talk about the original Last of Us game. How are you doing today?
Fantastic.
I'm excited. I'm also, like you said, going to try not to cry because this game, wow, this game really hit me in the feels. But I'm ready to talk about it because I love it.
So for the people to put name to voice, could you just say each of your names?
Yeah, so my name is Kayla. I am one of the co-hosts over on JK Games, and I'm excited to be here today.
And I'm Jerrica, the other host that also will say things about video games occasionally with Kayla.
One thing I do like about your show, by the way, is one of my favorite things, besides your banter, I mentioned to you guys off mic that I really like how you got the chemistry you two have, but I love your intro tagline of, we bring you the gaming news that we care about. For some reason, that just makes me chuckle every single time. Anyway, that's a complete digression. I just felt like throwing that out there.
We preface with that because, like, we try not to be, like, you know, we're not necessarily covering everything in the news, but we do cover like main big things that we care about, so, and some that we don't, because sometimes it's not good.
Well, and I like that you do it that way, because there's a million gaming podcasts that cover the news, and so the way you guys kind of make it your own, which I like, is that it's specific to what you care about, so it doesn't feel like you're just reciting news from other news sources. You're reciting news from other news sources, but then offering your interpretation and your analysis. That's the word I was looking for. Your analysis of the news. And that's why I like it so much.
Oh, well, thank you.
So I have you both on because I know you're big Naughty Dog fans, mm-hmm. PlayStation fans, and we are here to talk about the original Last of Us. So my first question to both of you is, when did you first play the original game? When did you first get into it?
I played it, this is Jerrica, I originally played it on the PlayStation 3, so I think it was out like maybe a year before it got updated or remastered to the PlayStation 4, I could be wrong, mm-hmm. So maybe around, was it 2013 when it came out, 2012?
I can look up the remaster date just so you have a frame of reference.
Right.
But yeah, I'm the worst with dates, I always have like, it was around that time, in 2013, I believe.
That's pretty right on, because the Last of Us remastered release date was July 29th, 2014, so okay. You said like a little bit before then, so you were right on.
Yeah, because I remember that was like between The Last of Us and, of course, Uncharted. Those were like the main games I played on my PlayStation 3. I don't really remember too much, because that was a sad generation. But man, it was for me anyways.
Right.
But it left a great impression on me. And then also I got to play the remastered version on my new PlayStation 4. So kicked it off with a bang, PlayStation did.
Well, I guess I'll go now. My name is Kayla, like I said before. But I actually have a pretty unique experience with The Last of Us. Me and Jerrica started this podcast, like, I mean, over a year ago, probably coming up on a year and a half. And I knew how much she loved Naughty Dog and loved The Last of Us. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, I've been a gamer my whole life, but I kind of like fell off the wagon and didn't game a whole lot. You know, I had a lot of stuff going on. And so when me and Jerrica started, I was in like the peak of my gaming career. I was super excited and super ready to try new games. Because I've always been super a routine person. I liked playing the same games. I was a big, just like, I loved first-person shooters. I thought that's all I wanted to play. And so when Jerrica, I saw how passionate she was about it, and I was like, wait, like, I really love Jerrica. She loves this game. Like, I want to play this game. It sounds amazing. And so I actually did not play the remaster. I only played the remaster. I didn't play the original one. I waited. Mm-hmm.
Kayla, you played it at the best time. Like, I did, actually. Literally, like, at the best time.
Was it before the second one came out?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I finished the day that the second one came out.
Oh, like, damn. I finished, okay.
Yeah.
So I literally put down the remaster and picked up the second one, like, in the same day.
That's a couple months of just sadness that you're playing through that.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Was it worth it, Kayla?
Yes,
100%. I was really upset just having to wait years, possibly, yes, for another game.
Yeah, so we're gonna get into it, I'm sure, but it ends on a very big cliffhanger. So
the second one?
No, the first one.
Okay.
We don't want to. I'm definitely not gonna spoil the second one at all.
Yeah, we will not spoil you.
I did have a couple things spoiled already for me, so I will say the spoilers for when we get to the end of Last of Us 1. Because I don't know if you guys watch this. There's a documentary you can watch on YouTube that's like an hour long of the behind the scenes of the making of the original Last of Us. And mm-hmm. It's super interesting and informative. I have like pages of notes from it.
That's awesome.
So it's a great documentary. But anyway, sorry, continue, Kayla.
Yeah, I think that pretty much wraps it up. But we've talked about it a lot on our podcast about how, like, I think that really was the best experience because I got to, like, follow up immediately with my feelings still. And again, like you said, it is a lot of sadness. But I think it was very fulfilling in the end. That's not a spoiler, but, like, in order to have, like, the next game. But yes, I had a really great experience. It really impacted me in a big way. It's one of my favorite games of all time now. Even the remastered one. So I'm really glad that Jerrica convinced me to play it. but I knew eventually I wanted to get to it, but I always put it off for some reason because I knew it was sad. And I'm like, oh, you know, I don't want to be sad. So
it's interesting that you chose to play it during a pandemic. Like, yes. You're like, I don't want to be sad, so let me play it in the middle of a pandemic.
Well, she knew she couldn't be on the show or be my co-host anymore if she didn't get caught up.
She's going to kick me off. She's going to fire me.
Because I was like, there's no way, Kayla. You got to play this right now.
No, I definitely worth it to wait, for sure.
For me, I played it. I actually got it on release. I got it on release day back when it came out. I think Jerrica, you're a little bit older than Kayla, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think you and I are around the same age. And I'm 31. I think
yes, I am close, also right? 31.
Yes, so. you feel the pains.
I am baby. I'm 23.
I just got new inserts for my shoes, so yeah.
I rearranged my game room like 2 weeks ago and I pulled my shoulder and it has not recovered for 3 fucking weeks.
Yeah, I don't, it's just something new every day with my body. But luckily I can still use my thumbs and my fingers for the controller.
That is all that matters.
That's all that matters.
We'll just wait a little bit for Kayla to come back.
I'm really sorry.
No, don't worry about it. I don't know if you've seen it on Instagram, I have a corgi.
Yes,
and it's adorable. So he's outside right now, probably sniffing at the door, wondering what I'm doing.
Yeah, me and Jerrica have to edit out our dogs a lot.
Yeah, we do.
He's also not allowed in the game room anymore, though, because there was one time where I wasn't home, I was doing overtime at work on a weekend, and I came back and he tore up some of my retro gaming magazines when he was a puppy. And there is this beautiful, pristine Metal Gear Solid poster, like perfect, mint, destroyed. Don't have it anymore, had to toss it. I was so sad. So I got the game right at launch, and I got it because it was Naughty Dog. Like, Naughty Dog's pedigree is so well known now. I will say I haven't played Last of Us 2, but from what I've heard, their gameplay design really hasn't upgraded since the original. So I mean, that's a little bit of a criticism, but I would say that maybe they should update it. But I also haven't played the second one. Would you agree with that? Do you think that their gameplay design needs to be updated from the second one to something a little bit more modern or different, at least?
For me, like, it was a little I think they could still rock what they're doing, because I think what they do, I didn't see a huge difference. They did a couple of new things that sort of elevate the gameplay or like how you fight and stuff, but ultimately like it sort of works for that game because it's like the only game to me that plays that way, and it's sort of like its own thing. I'm like, if it works, it works. Just keep at it. So I'm really here for the story and the beautiful cinematics, you know, let's be real.
Do you mean like the specifically like the way the game plays, like the, or do you mean like the graphics or the
way the game plays? Graphics obviously will change, though. I will say for this original game, I played it on my PS3 again, and it still looks good.
I think
that Last of Us, since it was such a late PS3 game, it was such a late in the generation PS3 game, the graphics hold up and it's comparable to pretty much a bad looking PS4 game, which. By bad, I mean it still looks good. It's just not as good as what's coming out right now, you know?
Yeah, then I would definitely agree with what Jerica said. I have seen the criticism of, like, some... I think it's a personal taste thing. I think that, like, you either like it or you don't, or you think it's okay. Like, I really like the playstyle. I think it's very interesting. But I would say they can... It's just on brand for them now as far as that goes. I mean, I think you could definitely update it. But for this game specifically, I think keeping it the same was a good move because it feels like very much like an extenuation of...
Yeah, the gameplay has always reminded me of like... It's very... I don't know the way to describe this, but it's hard. Like, it's not easy just to jump in. It, like, I've been playing Assassin's Creed Valhalla... Which that's taken me a second to get used to that. Those controls a little different, especially on a new controller. So if I would have just like hopped in and started playing The Last of Us, it would take it always takes me a minute to like get my bearings and like my sea legs and get used to playing that game.
I died so much.
Oh my god, yeah. And it's so brutal when Joel gets killed too.
I know it's
now I know you play as Ellie for most of the second one. Spoiler, probably should have said that beforehand. You play as Ellie for most of the second game. Because once spoiler for the second game, if you don't want to hear it, jump ahead like 5 seconds. One of the things that got spoiled for me was that Joel dies fairly early on in the second game. Which honestly makes a whole lot of sense based off of the documentary I watched. I mentioned it before. They have this awesome behind-the-scenes documentary. And one of the things that I think Neil Druckmann said... Hold on, let me find it. Yeah, Neil Druckmann said it was kind of cool in a way to create a female action character, and this is her origin story. Mm-hmm. And he said that way before Last of Us 2 came out. So if his intent was to make Ellie an action hero and this was her origin story, like the original Last of Us was her origin story, that makes so much more sense why you would kill off Joel in the sequel, because the whole focus is supposed to be on Ellie.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Oh, that's deep. He's always had this plan. Even when they asked him, like, do you have plans for a sequel? Like, right after, he's like, nah. I mean, if we do, we'll get there, you know, when the time's right, when the story's right. I think he's had both part one and part two in his head the whole time.
Yeah.
I wonder sometimes, like, was he actually, or was it? Because in the moment, a lot of times when you're that close to something that requires that much of yourself, that much of your energy, and especially with a game that is this depressing, Last of Us is so depressing. I wouldn't be surprised if he's like, all right, I need something happy to take my mind off of this now. So like, is there going to be a sequel? I don't want to think about that because it ended in a dark place and it's just going to get darker. So I don't really want, that's my thought. It reminds me, I'm a huge James Bond fan. And when Spectre came out, the most recent one that was actually released, at the end of it, they asked Daniel Craig, you know, who played Bond, do you want to do Bond again? He's like, I'd rather slip my wrists. He said that in an actual interview.
That's awesome.
Wow.
He was just so against it. And so like he's in doing the moment, another one. And it's coming back. He this is his last one. And when it's supposed to be out next year, you know, COVID permitting.
Mm-hmm.
But because it's already been delayed twice now. I'm so sad.
Right.
But I wouldn't be surprised if Druckmann was like, I don't want to think about this right now. This is so sad.
Especially how invested, yeah, for sure.
For me, the gameplay of the original, the reason I asked about is Naughty Dog's gameplay outdated is because even when the original, with this original one, I always felt like the gameplay was a little bit underwhelming, not in a bad way. Like, mm-hmm. it serviced the story perfectly, but it didn't reinvent the wheel. It was a very kind of simple style of gameplay. I will say, though, the survival mechanics of the scarcity of ammo and health and all this other stuff, I think they fucking nailed it. It is spot on.
Like, I don't know what they would do. Like, obviously you haven't played the like part two, but I'm sure you've seen some snippets of gameplay. Like, I don't know what they would do to even elevate. Like, what is it? Like, what does that evolution look like for The Last of Us? Like, what could they have done different? Like, with the gameplay?
No, I haven't played the sequel, like I said, but for me, an evolution of Last of Us game, of that type of gameplay, of that survival mechanic, is maybe you have to find, like, somehow incorporate more puzzles while having limited resources, mm-hmm. type of thing, where they give you, which you run a risk, you have to be careful with it. Maybe have it so you would have puzzles where if you were smart and you collected the resources, you can bypass large swarms of infected. But if you don't have it, then you have to fight your way through it somehow. But make it so that way, if the player, no matter what status the player is in, whether they have a shitload of ammo or if they have just melee weapons, or they have to be stealthy and try to find a way around it, as long as they give them those materials to get through that, maybe find other resources in order to use, like, puzzles to get around the infected with, where you don't have to worry about them. You can just walk over them or go underneath them or something like that. That's just off the top of my head.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, I do feel like they did do some of that for sure.
Oh, that's good to know that.
Yeah. I don't want to tell you too much about it, because you definitely should play it. But
I know.
But yeah,
I know.
I do feel like they actually did do it. There's a lot of puzzles, I feel like.
But that was just my opinion on the gameplay. Like, I thought that it was good. It was solid. It just that I remember when I first played it, it didn't feel inventive and new, kind of like how Uncharted felt. Uncharted felt so different from anything else at the time, where Last of Us, I think the tone of the story is what really set it apart. And let's kind of use that to dive into the story itself. The whole premise of the original Last of Us game is you play as a guy named Joel, and you see at the beginning, in the opening portion of the game, where the infection first happens, where the pandemic starts, and it is one of the most gut-wrenching opening scenes of any game I've ever played. How, like, what did you guys, when you first experienced that, because essentially for the listener, who those who, spoiler alert once again, but Joel's daughter dies in the opening scene, so what, how did that hit you? Did that shock you when you first played it?
Yes, I think I definitely gasped. I remember, like, oh, God, blessed. Are they going to do this right now? good Lord. And just started crying, because, like, you, like, it's crazy, because when you first start that game, you don't know too much about the characters. You get to, like, walk around the house a little bit, but before that scene happens, like, you don't know a lot about them, but then by the time it happens, though, you're crying. And, like, it's they did something right to make you immediately, like,
invested,
start crying. And it wasn't
it's
a lot.
Like the first 10 minutes of Up or something.
Yeah.
Right.
Jesus. But with zombies.
Right. Add the zombies for sure.
That would be a very different that would be a very different opening to that movie.
Right.
Sorry. Go on.
I think that I actually somehow managed to also not see many spoilers. Jerrica remained very tight-lipped about it, because she knew I wanted to play it. But also, like, I don't think I saw a whole lot in the media about either game before I played. So I got to escape by pretty unfazed as far as spoiler goes. I did know, I think that I knew that his daughter was going to die. I'm pretty sure. Just because I knew that, like, him and Ellie were the main characters. And so I assumed, like, if she was alive, she probably would have been in there. You know what I mean? I actually at first assumed that she was his daughter before I knew anything about, like, Ellie was his daughter before I knew anything about the game, which essentially she kind of is, but, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was very shocked. It was very sad. I cried. I sent Jerrica a video of me in tears and was like, I hate you for making me listen.
And I was like, this is only the beginning.
Yeah, literally the very beginning. So yeah, definitely. It did take me by surprise, but I was very excited to see where it went, even though excited's a weird word to say, but, like, I was very instantly invested in his story arc to see like what happened next.
You're excited to see more zombies and murder.
Yes. No. I also, like, fun fact, I don't know if you know this about me, but like I also I really like anything scary and like dark. Like I enjoy stuff like that. Not saying like I'm a dark person, because it did make me really sad, obviously. And I didn't want any more of that. But I really like games that make you feel something, even if feeling something might be sad. But I think that just goes to show like that video games can do that, which is pretty crazy. Like that's the sort of media that can really like make you feel something. And even if it's sometimes negative feelings, like it just shows that like,
it's just like, know, you can walk in someone else's shoes, and it's sort of interesting to see like how they would react, and like you are fighting in your head, like how you would react. But this, what I love about Naughty Dog games is that they're telling you don't choose your own path in this kind of game, which I sometimes love and sometimes I don't. Like I love a storyline that just straps me in and I'm just there for the ride. But you have a lot of those conflicting thoughts in both the first and the second game.
I think Naughty Dog does a really good job of their storytelling, and they have ever since Jak and Daxter. Like the Jak 2 and Jak 3 really took Jak's story in like a way you weren't expecting it to go. And then when you got to Uncharted, they were very fun and campy and lighthearted, but they were still good stories, well-written, well-acted, and all that good stuff. So this was their first time really trying to dive into a very serious, like, conversation about humanity, because they're talking about what would happen to the world. How would people react to this pandemic? How would people treat each other when all this stuff is going on? And it's interesting because you do see, you know, lights and darknesses. You see some people who are much more trusting and but also wary of everybody, which you kind of see later on with the brothers. I can't remember their name off the top of my head. You know what? I have a list of the characters right here. So Henry and Sam. Mm.
Yes.
And Sam. And the way their story ends is just heartbreaking. That was their portion of the game is where that was when I audibly gasped. Like, I knew something was going to happen in the beginning. I didn't have any spoilers, but like, I was like, okay, so this is going to be a really emotional game. I get it. But when Henry and Sam die, once again, spoilers. I mean, spoilers for the whole thing.
For sure. Yeah.
But when they die, that's where it really hit me. And the whole story after the beginning of the game, where you see how the infection begins, is that Joel, you flash forward, I think, what, 20 years, I want to say, I think, from
that
point?
Yeah, I think so, about that much, yeah. Or about that long.
Yeah, it's a good number of years later, and now Joel is much older. He is good friends with this woman named Tess, and they pretty much just kind of do odd jobs, legal or otherwise, in order to make ends meet. And so they get a job to bring this girl over to the Fireflies, to I think Washington, D.C. And you find out, and this is where Ellie comes in, and you find out she's immune to the virus. And she is very, she's, one thing I love about Ellie, first off, is that you don't have to watch her. Escort quests are the worst. But no, I like Ellie because you don't have to watch her. She does her own thing and she can take care of herself. And which is one, a great thing, because you usually, it's not the damsel in distress trope that you see all the time. But then two, it also is just so much more fun for the player that you don't have to watch after somebody the entire time.
Right. It's really nice to have, you know, like a badass female young kid, really, in a game that's severely independent. I personally feel like I related to her on a personal level. I think that's why this game might have connected with me so much, because I'm a lot different now that I've matured, but like when I was younger especially, I didn't want any help. I didn't want anybody worrying about me. I wanted to be like independent. I can take care of myself. Like that's how I kind of still am like that. But I just thought that was really cool to see that. And especially how, like, I know we're still talking more about the beginning of the game, especially how that evolves.
We can go forward to,
like,
I just
like the relationships in this game is what really like tugged on my heartstrings. Like the way that people interact with each other, the way that, like, you know, they're just trying to make it, you know, and that's kind of how what we all
like
do.
And trying to make it and like not catch feelings or like get too attached or,
yeah,
you know, I think that was Joel's whole, like, he was just having a struggle with that.
Little did he know.
He just never thought he could feel anything again.
Oh, he caught feelings for sure.
He caught feelings.
Not in a weird way. Yeah, not in a gross way. The one note I had from about Joel and Ellie's relationship, well, at least one of the many, when they were in development, they didn't want Ellie to be Joel's daughter because if she was, they didn't feel like the story would have gone anywhere further. There'd be no reason for Joel and Ellie to progress through this story together or for their relationship to progress because they're already close, their father and daughter, versus when Joel's daughter dies and now he kind of has this surrogate daughter through Ellie, it gives them narratively a way to connect the two instead of Joel and Ellie being at the same level of their relationship the entire way through the game. It gives them a place to go, not just physically that she's, you know, immune to the virus and she has to go somewhere, but also emotionally and personally to each other. There's some place for their relationship to go together, which I thought was a really smart choice. Neil Druckmann's a fucking genius. He does so many great things. I know he kind of had that mishap, that awkward quote before Last of Us 2 came out that everyone, like, did you see that quote that he had?
It didn't bother me, which is, I don't know what it was.
There was nothing wrong with it. It was people blew it out of proportion. He said, and I'm paraphrasing from what I remember reading, but he basically said, if you are racist, sexist, misogynistic, homophobic, don't play our game. And
that's perfectly normal to say.
Exactly. He's saying if you are. And then, of course, everyone on the internet was like, what? You're telling me not to play the game if I don't like it? I'm like, that's not what he's saying. He's not saying if you don't like it, then you're racist, sexist, misogynist. He's saying if you already are that, don't play it. Like, there's a big difference.
You probably won't like it. Yeah.
There's a big difference. Exactly. You probably won't like it. And it's just weird how people conflated it to meaning if you don't like it, then you are all these awful things.
Oh, good God.
Like, that's not,
I didn't even notice that was a thing. I remember that tweet, but I read it the correct way, like he intended. Yeah.
I totally forgot where we even were in the story. Like, where were we? We were talking about relationships as far as like Joel and Ellie's relationship for sure. And I mean, one of the main things that I really loved about this game was seeing that progression, and seeing like in the beginning, he doesn't even want her like tagging all, like he doesn't want her at all. He wants nothing to do with her. He's like, and like, it makes him sad. It feels like because, of his daughter, you know, and, you definitely can tell he's very emotionally reserved, is just making it through life, like just trucking along, so yeah, it's definitely really cool to see the evolution of that relationship as it progresses, and I just really enjoyed that aspect of this game.
And up until Ellie kind of showed up, Joel wasn't really living. He was just a shell of who he was, and he was just surviving. He wasn't actually, like, the closest thing he had to a friend was Tess, and then Tess sacrificed herself for him and Ellie to escape. Because once you get to where the fireflies are supposed to be to bring Ellie, you find out they're not there anymore. And Joel's brother, who you met earlier in the intro to the game, does have connections to the fireflies. So now him and Ellie are traveling across the country, I think out to Pittsburgh, I believe, is where his brother was. He remembered where his brother was last, I think.
Something else, now that you mentioned his brother, is like what I also really love about this game and the second game is how strong the supporting characters are.
Yes.
And how important they are. It's like, again, no spoilers for the second game, but like how your companions are actually like helpful. Like, it that's this way in the first game too. Like, I mean, and they add significant content and like,
I'll never forget from, the first one, Last of Us, obviously, is just seeing Ellie like go off the beaten path and like just start having a conversation or talking out loud, thinking her thoughts, getting her little pun book out and telling jokes and stuff like that. Like that, like those kind of, they're like always the smallest things in like Naughty Dog games that always get me. And I'm like, it was such a small thing for them to add, but it adds so much value to the story they're telling. And it's always the small things like that I'm just like, that's awesome. I'm so glad they put that in there.
when they were talking in the behind the scenes, when they were talking about game design of it, they were talking about how those conversations and Ellie's body language specifically was meant to reflect her opinion towards Joel, like the connection she had to Joel. So in the beginning, she's a lot more nervous about who Joel is. She doesn't know him that well. He's a stranger, and she's going to a place she's never been. So like her arms are much closer together. Mm-hmm. Like her shoulders are a lot stiffer. She's very close knit, like physically. She kind of binds herself up. And as she gets to know Joel by the end of the game, you know, she's kind of, it's almost like standing at ease, like in the military or something. Like she's walking much more freely. She doesn't feel the need to, like, kind of, I don't want to say cower, but kind of like walk timidly behind him. Now it's just more, yes, defensively. That's a better word than everything I was using.
I think they both of those could apply though.
Which is interesting, because like I remember, I feel like in some Artifact or maybe like it was the comic books I was reading, something like, I feel like Ellie was like in some kind of military school, or mm-hmm. she was in some kind of school like that beforehand.
Like a boarding school or something.
Yeah, sure. Like in the where she was being kept, like she was like in this really strict school. Because mm-hmm. like I don't know if it's how I forget where I get bits of information from, because I read the comic. I forgot the comic, but like her mom like died when she gave birth to her, or right after, like around that time. And like mm-hmm. one thing we still don't know is like who's her dad? Where's dad at? Like where?
Me and Jerica want a prequel.
We do. We want it.
Well, wasn't the I didn't actually play the DLC, the Left Behind DLC. Isn't that kind of a prequel to the game? Like it shows what happened.
Yeah.
Like because it tells the story of how Ellie found out she was immune. Because I believe she has a girlfriend in the prequel, in the Left Behind stuff, right? And mm-hmm. Spoiler alert, her girlfriend gets infected and goes crazy, and Ellie doesn't. They were both bit, mm-hmm. but she was fine. And like that once again, Naughty Dog hitting us with a gut punch. Like,
yeah, thanks.
Oh my god.
But they do even, I didn't play the DLC either, but I knew all that, like I had spoilers anyway, but she in the end of the actual game, don't they actually talk about it a little bit, like right towards the end?
I don't remember.
Or is that the second game?
No, she mentions it. She mentions how she found out she was immune. Yeah. I replayed through the whole thing for the first time since its release earlier this year in preparation for this episode. Mm-hmm. And she does tell that whole thing. She tells the whole story of how a paraphrased version of how she found out she was immune. But mm-hmm. no, you're right. The to bring it back to something you said earlier about how the supporting cast is so strong in this. To get to Pittsburgh, they have to find a car, because you know they want to go to Pittsburgh to meet the Fireflies, or meet Bill, Joel's brother, so that way, because he has connections to the Fireflies, so that way they can find out where to bring Ellie. And you meet this character named Bill, who's just this insane like
doomsday prepper,
like. Yeah. And the voice actor for him is W. Earl Brown, and that like he kind of looks like Bill a little bit.
Yeah.
Just a little bit. My favorite thing, though, is when speaking of voice actors, my favorite surprise casting is Nolan North in this game.
I remember.
He's David.
Yeah. I always forget about that.
He doesn't Who's sound David? Like Nolan North.
No. And usually David he always is the does. Cannibal.
Oh, that brings me to another thing. The villains in this. It's just, I think they do, I think Naughty Dog in general does a great job on villains, but especially this game, like, wow, like, it's just, I try not to get the two confused, because I played them so close together that I try not to, like, I need a distinct between the two, but, yeah, they do a really good job
at least setting up, like, antagonist. The humans that are bad, you know, like, mm-hmm. The ones that are a little, they went off the beaten path a little too mm-hmm. harshly, and, like,
yeah,
they're the ones that are on the verge of probably dying, and like this is they are gonna do everything they can to survive.
They have a lot of morally gray characters,
because like they put you like at the same time you sort of understand where some of the characters are coming from, especially the ones that are maybe trying to kill you or attack you or eat you.
Well,
I was gonna say, in thinking of villains, would you say that Joel is actually the main villain of the game, that the whole time you go through the whole game thinking you're the hero, and you find out at the very end you're kind of the villain? Mm-hmm. So
I can see both sides, yeah.
Well, for those who haven't played it, or don't care about spoilers, obviously it's too late now, but we...
There's no going back now.
We said it like 1,000 times.
Yeah. We'll put it in our episode title too.
It's almost like a nervous tick where I'm just like, spoiler alert. It's just, it's something that I automatically do without even thinking anymore. But when you finally do get to the Fireflies, when you go through all these, all this craziness that happens, you find out that the way that they have to extract the vaccine from Ellie, the cure from Ellie, is it'll kill her. They have, because the way the fungus works... That's another thing. The way they did the fungus is so in-depth. We'll get back to it. I don't want to lose my point, though. They have to extract the fungus from Ellie's brain, which will kill her, and then they can use that to create a vaccine or a cure. And Joel can't handle that. Joel already lost his daughter once before, and he just goes on a murder spree through the entire Firefly hospital. He kills all of them, and... You could maybe use your suspension of disbelief to be like, well, it's a game, you know, like Nathan Drake is technically a serial killer, but, you know, he's not actually a bad person because, you know, you're playing a game. You use that suspension of disbelief. But when you get to that and you pick Ellie up and you're walking out.
Such
and
a great scene.
Joel kills the leader of the Fireflies. He kills, why can't it, Marlene. He shoots her and because... She was going to let him go, but he's like, no, you're just going to follow us, and kills her. Mm-hmm. And then when Ellie wakes up, he lies to her face about what happened. And he goes, no, there was other people. You know, you weren't the only one, so they didn't need you there, all this other stuff. And Ellie doesn't quite believe it. And then you have like one last section where you're just kind of playing through. It's just a walking simulator at this point. There's no more infected in this last section after that cutscene. But you're walking through some woods to get back to Bill's brothers because that's where they're going to live at the end of the first game. And I actually wrote this note down. The very last action you perform in the game, because you're controlling Ellie now, which kind of is foreshadowing to what happens in Last of Us 2 where you play as most of Ellie. But you're playing as Ellie now, and the very last action you perform is trusting Joel to help you up a wall. And then the very next thing he does after that is he betrays her trust once again by lying to her face when she says, are you sure I was the only one? He says, yeah, no, I'm telling the truth. And then it credits.
Wow.
I want to play it again now. I just get, oh.
Go.
What I love about this is there is so much room for discussion here. Like, I mean, put yourself in that situation. Like, the only person that you love, you've had everyone you love taken away from you violently. You've been through so much shit. Mm-hmm. And this person was about to be. And now, granted, you know how important this is to that person. You know that this person probably would have, knowing the consequences, done it anyway. And that's all she wanted, was her life to have a purpose, for her to have saved everyone. That's what she wanted. And this would have changed the whole entire world. It would have been the cure.
Yeah.
And you know that, and you're making the decision. It's a very selfish decision, I think, but also, like, I can't imagine. Like, I have no idea. I'm not a parent also. So, I mean, in a way, she was like his daughter in the end. But it's just, I think there's so much room for introspection, like, you know, what would I do? And that's what I love about this game is, like, it's not realistic, but also it is really realistic. And like, it's so human, like you feel so many emotions going through this game. And I was shocked at the end. I had no idea. I thankfully didn't get any spoilers, and I was just left like in a hole of sadness and disbelief. Like, it's insane.
What do you think, Jerrica? Do you think Joel is a villain, or the villain of the game?
I'm just trying to, like, if I was in his situation, back to like what Kayla was saying, like, it just depends on what side of the spectrum you're, like, who's part of your, like, who are the people that matter to you, and everyone else is always going to be the villain in this environment, in this world, like, unfortunately.
Oh, that's a good point.
Like, I watch a lot of The Walking Dead too. I'm a big Walking Dead fan. And like, anytime, like, obviously we're going through a real life pandemic right now, and hopefully we're going to get our shit figured out and things don't hit the fan like to that extent. But like you start like
we can only
but
hope.
Like but I'm serious, like I play these games and I think about like the only thing that would matter is like me and my family, my close friends. If we had a family pat, like if we had a group together, like that would be all that matters, because I don't trust anybody else. Because everyone's just That's trying to point. Survive. And it's just like everyone is unhinged.
Well,
at that
just
point.
Because yeah, quite literally. he makes the rational, like the decision, the familial decision. It's his family, so he's trying to preserve his family. Just because he's doing that doesn't mean that it's not a villainous thing. Mobsters are very close to all their families, and they steal shit from everybody. You know what I'm saying? Like, he stole a vaccine, a cure from the world, because he couldn't help to lose his own daughter. I'm not saying he's a bad. I mean, he's a bad person because he did that, but at the same time, he's a fully fleshed out character, you know?
Yeah.
Whether you classify him as the villain or not, he's still a fully fleshed out character. He's a villain. Yeah. If he is the villain, he's a sympathetic villain. You understand his motivation.
He's not a sociopath.
You understand.
Yeah.
Exactly. Oh, he's a sociopath, but he has a reason to. It's not like he was born that way. He survived a pandemic for 20 years with everyone that he loved getting turned into zombies or getting killed.
Yeah, he is.
Or him having to kill them.
He trusts no one, but like he knows that he can take care of Ellie. Like that's all he knows. There's no trust for him anymore. So like he's going through his mind, he's like, what if this doesn't even work? Is it worth like losing Ellie? Like, is it worth it at that point? Like, you know, probably
yeah, like
it's
he
even
know
hard
the
to
fireflies.
It's even hard to believe. Yeah, like you just got there. I would need some hard evidence, okay? I would need some tests, some trial tests done.
Like a villain test?
No, I was just like, before like I hand over Ellie, like I was thinking of Joel.
Okay,
like
I would
I'm like, show me some proof that this is going to work, okay?
Well, and I don't even remember exactly this part, but do they offer, like, I know I'm trying to remember the exact conversation when they tell him that it's not going to, like, she's going to die. And does he even say, like, is there any other option? Like, does she have to die? Like, I don't remember that dialogue.
From what I remember, he does. The reason why she has to die, and we can use this to kind of talk about one of the coolest things they did with the storytelling in this game, is with the way the infected work. It's not just your normal zombies. It's this idea of a fungal infection that just kind of takes over a person's body. And they were talking about how the fungus grows on your brain. Like that's how it infects you. It goes up through your nervous system and then grows on your brain. And that's how you become this awful zombie thing. And they got the idea from this type of fungus. I don't know if I wrote it down.
It's sort of real. It happens to like bugs and stuff. Yeah.
I actually looked it up. It's inspired by a fungus to ants. Basically the fungus will infect the ant and germinate within them, or not germinate, but it will infect them, and then it will essentially turn the ant into a zombie ant, and it will grow out of the ant, and the spores will, like, essentially what it does to the humans, and the spores will release and infect other nearby ants, and it kind of chain reacts just like it does in the game. That's where they came up with the idea, and it's kind of terrifying because it does actually happen, just not to humans, so thank God. I don't think it's possible for it to... knock on wood. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what? It's just not going to happen. 2020's
had too much.
One of the things they did, though, with the infected is that they created a cycle for infection. Like, what does an early stage of the infection look like in a human? What is a late stage? And you can see that in the combat as well, as clickers are generally middle to late stage infected because the mushroom has literally sprouted out of their face and it's disgusting as hell looking. And then you get to the very end ones, and I think they call them boomers. Is that what they call them?
Yeah.
The big bloaters.
Mm-hmm. Bloaters,
that's
actually, yes.
Yeah. I was thinking of Left 4 Dead.
That's what I was like, wait, boomer is it? Like, there's some kind of zombie boomer out there. Wait.
Yeah, it's
Left
4 Dead.
Zombie boomer.
Zombie boomer.
that zombie's constantly complaining about other younger zombies. They just don't understand life before the internet, you know?
No. It's just not even, yeah.
Those zombies ruined the fungal market.
Yep. Tanked it. They took all our jobs.
Oh my god.
No, but I agree. I think it's really interesting how fleshed out, no pun intended, the game is, and how it all ties together, and how they spent that much time explaining so it seems even more realistic. And it's scary. We didn't really touch on that. This game's scary. Like,
it's really scary. It's
insanely anxiety provoking. Like, you never know what's around the next corner. It is very stealth focused. And honestly, like, it gave me heart palpitations. but I loved every second of it. And I think that says a lot, especially when, like, it is a, you know, dark, like, sad game, to still come out of that really enjoying it. I think says a lot.
So I'm not a fan of horror games, and I loved this game because I don't like being scared. I'm a scaredy cat. Mm-hmm. I'm a wimp with that.
That's okay.
I was trying to play Dead Space on stream, and I just couldn't do it.
Aww.
There was, oh my God, I was playing. I barely got any way into it. The first, you know, there were some scary moments, and then I got to a section still early on. I'm talking like maybe first 30, 40 minutes, and all the lights go out. And I immediately paused the game. I'm like, nope, I'm out, not touching this anymore. I just turned it off and switched over to like Zelda or something like that. But no, you're right. It's a really scary game. But what I think is good about it is that it's not too scary, if that makes sense. Because like I said, I'm a wimp. But it has to allow enough gameplay where it's not, I don't like jump scares. And this game doesn't rely on jump scares. Mm-hmm. The horror is the pandemic itself.
The realism,
Yes. The what people do to each other and what the virus does to people. And it's, I like that a lot more than sitting in a hallway that's dark and just waiting for monsters to come eat me. Like, that's not fun to me.
Right. It's very psychological and less like in your face.
100%.
Yeah.
100%. I guess we can talk about some other of the characters though, because we kind of went over the whole story just in a very condensed nutshell. Joel and Ellie make it to the Fireflies. Joel kills all the Fireflies and lies to Ellie. That is the fastest way to describe Last of Us I can think of. But some of the characters we haven't talked about on the way are, we mentioned them before, Sam and Henry, which was probably one of the most gut-wrenching moments in the game. I've been talking a lot. I've been explaining the story. And could one of you guys tell what happens with Sam and Henry and how it affected you?
I'm gonna be honest. I just remember something bad happened, like really sad, but I don't remember the specifics of that part. But Caleb may remember.
Also, you know, trigger warning, there's some violence and like self-inflicted violence involved. If that bothers you, don't listen to this part. But if I remember correctly, the son gets infected by an infected biting him, right? I think that he gets taken.
So they're brothers.
Oh yes, not I always think they're father and son, but they're not. They're brothers.
Yeah.
But he gets, you know, I believe that they're stuck on another side of a wall. Like they're trying to help escape. They get separated, and then that happens. And then unfortunately, which one's the older one? I forget.
Henry is the older one, and then Sam is the younger one.
Yes, and then Henry, I believe, takes his own life, right?
Yeah, so Henry is forced to kill Sam because Sam is attacking Ellie.
Yes.
And then in a fit of just, like, mental, like, I can't even imagine, like, he just had a mental breakdown. Understandably so, he just killed his little brother.
Yeah.
And then it just this psychological break, he just couldn't live with himself, and so he didn't.
That's insane.
Oh my God, that I can't handle that. I remember hearing that during the development of Last of Us 2, that Last of Us 1 was about love and Last of Us 2 was about hate. And so when I heard about that, I'm like, if Last of Us 1 is about love and we have a brother shooting his younger brother and committing suicide shortly thereafter, and that's about love, I don't know if I want to play the second
one. Now that I'm hearing like a vet scene, it's coming back to me now, but like, also, I could say, like, I feel like that was probably the worst. Like, and part two, you don't really have that much.
There's none of that.
Believe it or not.
It's still obviously gut-wrenching and very, very emotional.
Not to that extent. Like, it's a different type
of feeling. I think that, you know, I think that that was more, almost not to invalidate it, but I think it was for shock value in a way, because just, like, how easy that life can escape you, and, like, mainly because, like, you know, I didn't know that they weren't going to survive because I remember talking to Jericho like, oh, I love them so much. Like, I think they're great. Like, so I think that Naughty Dog specifically in these two games does do that for shock value, not just for the aspect of it being a shock, but like to contribute to the harsh, harsh realities of this world. People can come and go like that. And that, I think that really shows that and how hard that this life is on people. But yeah, definitely know that going into it. If you if you don't want to experience anything like that, that's a trigger warning for that for sure. But yeah, I definitely was shocked by that. I did not see that coming. And it is, I think you probably have played this most recently out of all of us. When did you say you played it last?
Month ago.
Okay. Yeah.
Like, so, I finished it a month ago.
So I, even though I wasn't that long ago, but, I had forgotten a little bit about that, but yeah, he ends up saving Ellie from his little brother, which yeah, that's, I can't imagine. And then it almost is like, not that they didn't care about them, but Ellie and Joel just kind of move on. They just kind of keep going, you know, like
they
it,
have to, like, it's
exactly.
It's,
yeah. It affects
it feels
them.
Almost, it feels almost militaristic in a sense where it's like, you can't, you don't have time to grieve for the fallen because you're too busy trying to survive.
Yeah.
It's very reminiscent of that. The next character you meet after Henry and Sam, I believe it's one of the next characters you meet after Henry and Sam, is David. Because what happens is Joel gets mortally injured in one spot, and I think they're trying to climb up something, and Joel falls off, and a rebar goes right through
yes.
the side of his stomach. It still gives me chills thinking about that. It just seems so painful. And Ellie has to fight off the bad guys, and Joel does his best. Like, you're still playing as Joel, and you're like helplessly trying to fight off these guys, and Ellie ultimately saves you and brings you somewhere. And when she's out hunting for food, she meets David, played by Nolan North, which he doesn't sound like Nolan North at all, you know. He just it's such a good performance by him where it's you don't know it's him. I didn't know it was him until literally when I replayed it. I was so surprised.
Mm-hmm.
And you find out that this character David is pretty much the dude who's been sending guys after you for the last, like,
yeah,
forever. And you don't really know why. I will say this. Do you know why he's that hell-bent on getting them? I understand towards the end it was revenge because Joel and Ellie killed so many of his men. But up until that point, I think it started in Pittsburgh. Like, this is out, like, you meet David out in, like, Utah. So what is he doing with guys all the way out in Pittsburgh? Unless he's got some kind of crazy network, or if I'm just misinterpreting everything. I don't know. Do you have any idea why he's so hell-bent on killing Joel and Ellie, or do you not remember?
I definitely don't remember. It's been too long.
I don't know either, except maybe that he's just very, like, vengeful. I don't know. Maybe that's just he just seems kind of like a psychopath, so that's probably why.
He's dedicated.
Yeah.
And he's got contacts.
But I will say that scene that we just talked about is one of my favorite scenes. Is like, it comes full circle where, like, Ellie is saving Joel. Like, Ellie is taking care of him. Like, he's been taking care of her. And she's, I believe she, like, almost, like, half, like, carries him, right? Because they have to, like, hobble. And I feel like the gameplay in this is very intense, and I really think the scene is really, really cool in that way. That, like, obviously it's not cool that he got, you know, impaled, but she gets to defend him and, like, be there for him. And she's been there for him the whole time, but it's been more of, like, him protecting her. And again, you get to see it come full circle where, you know,
a player, you really sort of didn't see that coming.
Like, yeah,
it was near the end of the game, right?
When
you finally get to play as Ellie.
Very close to the end.
It's almost like you went this whole way with Joel and, like, oh, wow, this is a surprise.
You feel like Joel is one of the main characters in, like, yeah, it's really cool that you got to play. I knew that you got to play as her, but I didn't know in what context yet.
What I love about that whole segment where she rescues Joel and then she goes and meets David and then Joel has to come back and help her is that it really solidifies their relationship as not, as codependent, as not, mm-hmm. they're not independent anymore. This is, Joel needed her to survive and she needed Joel to help her basically get out of that camp. But what I like though is when she kills David, Joel does not kill David for her. It's awful. Like, she goes through this psychological break killing David and Joel has to pull her off and she still is in this psychotic state of just in pure fight or flight mm-hmm. mode, like in just pure fight mode still. Right? And so he pulls her off, but she defeats David on his own, but he still fights his way back to get to her. So it becomes this very codependent relationship where they kind of save each other in this one portion of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Joel wouldn't have survived if it wasn't for her.
And vice versa.
Who knows what would have happened? Who knows what would have happened to Ellie if Joel didn't show up after she killed David, you know? But I love that portion too, because they completely change how you play the game in a sense. Because when you're playing as Ellie, you can't take out enemies right away. Like, you can stealth kill, but she has to jump on their back and like stab them in the throat a bunch of times. And it's really brutal. Mm-hmm. It's so brutal. And they completely change up the gameplay style, which I think is such a good design choice, because it doesn't feel like Joel anymore.
It separates the characters. You're a different person. Yes. And they carry that through to the second game for sure. You feel like you're playing a different character for sure.
In the second game, without giving anything away, does what Ellie feel like she has a different weight? I mean, she is older in the second game, so does she... Like, because in this one, if you try to do a stealth kill, like, Joel will just come up behind someone and, like, strangle them and break their neck. Does Ellie do... It's kind of a weird question. Does Ellie break necks in the second game?
I like this question. Yes. I feel like she definitely is bigger, so she's able to do more. You can definitely tell she's been doing this for a long time. She's
breaking necks and taking names.
She's got some more grit, if you can get that from her.
And like talking about
gritty.
This game again is just like really solidifying like Ellie's mental status in the second game. Because like I sort of play it and I'm like, and I'm, without any spoilers, I'm like, come on, Ellie, like what's wrong with you? Oh, you've been through a lot of shit. Like you've had a rough life and you have murdered tons of people. Like you sort of forget that because you've seen the trailer, they're sort of living in a new town and like it seems like there's a community and like she's able to be normal and like she's been through a lot. I don't think she can ever be normal. Like,
yeah.
Well, no one would be after all that. I think that's a smart storytelling choice that they don't just let Joel and Ellie suddenly be okay after everything that they just went through.
Like,
these are flawed, broken individuals and not always of their own choice. Like, don't get me wrong, Joel still made an awful choice. And I do not want to know if him lying to her at the end comes back to bite him. I don't want to know. I want that to be a big surprise for me. Because I know he gets killed, but I don't know. Or I know he dies. I don't know if he gets killed. I know he dies. I just don't know how exactly that part reconciles. Because it's actually been a debate. If I had a debate with a friend of mine, and when I finished the game, and this will be a good way to kind of close out the story segment before we move into just kind of like our thoughts about the gameplay and overall visual and sound aesthetic. But when I finished the game, I thought Ellie didn't know Joel lied to her. I thought that she believed him, and that just made it even more dark to me that she believed it. You know what I mean? Now, my friend Cody, who's been on before, he was on my Devil May Cry episode. He thought that she knew he was lying, but decided to accept it anyway. Do you remember what your interpretation of that ending was? Now, I know it's going to be hard because you know how the second game goes, but do you remember what your thoughts were at the end of the first game? Did Ellie know Joel was lying or did she not?
I feel like if I just really take it based on what I know about her character, she just probably thought that she knew something was up. Because, like, honestly, like, I know they've been together for a little while, but, like, obviously she's seen him do some really bad things.
Yeah.
And I think she could be like, well, he's hiding something from me for sure.
I think that I agree. I don't think she knew that it was a bold-faced lie.
Yeah.
I think she knew that something was wrong. Because obviously, you know, she asks again. And it's almost like she's giving him a final chance to, like, fess up in a way. I don't think that she... I feel like if she truly knew, like, 100% that he was lying, they would have maybe... Or maybe they just didn't want you to know. Like, maybe internally she knew. But I feel like it would have been a bigger production in a way. Like, I think she would have made a bigger scene. But, yeah. I mean, trying to separate the two, knowing what we do know, I think that she had an inkling that something was up, for sure. But...
And that was my friend's point, was that she did know, but she kind of chose to not be mad about it because Joel was... Her whole world.
Her only person, like, yeah.
The only person she could trust. And likewise, she didn't want to believe it, even though she might have. I believe it's been definitively stated by Neil Druckmann that she didn't believe him. Like, she knew he was lying. But I'm going to wait to find out until the second game to be 100% certain. But I had this debate with my friend Cody for months, and I'd get so mad at him over this. It was over something stupid. It doesn't matter, but I guess once again, what you were saying before, Kayla, how this game really gets your emotions going. It really makes you emotional. It speaks to the power of this game's story that if you can get upset over someone's opinion of their interpretation of a fictional story, it's some good storytelling.
We talk about it with our friends all the time. People have hot takes. Thankfully, me and Jerrica pretty much agree as a whole on most of it. I mean, all of it, really. But yeah, I think it's fun. I mean, I don't think it needs to be like friendship ending over like, you know, some things. I think but I think it's fun discussion for sure. And I think
he's
it's
dead
okay.
To me.
I know. I didn't mean
cannot
that.
Cannot wait till like, you finish part two.
Joking.
Yes.
I can't wait for you to finish part two. I want to talk to you about part two as soon as you finish.
I'm asking for it for Christmas, yeah. So hopefully I'll get it.
We can do another. I would love to do another episode like this, exactly like this, for part two after you get done.
Definitely.
But yeah, I think that I'm very excited to hear what you think. I think this has been a great discussion. I love it. I love talking to people who like it as well.
One of the things I love about doing, like, because a lot of my show is a lot of deep dives into the into the games I'm talking about. I pick one game per episode, you know, and I just kind of go into it. And this is the reason, especially like Last of Us is so, it lends itself to this kind of conversation because the story just goes so many different places and does so many things, and the characters are so unique and varied. I thought it was kind of funny on the Wikipedia page for this. Like, literally, one of the top things it says is that it's considered one of the greatest games of all time. Mm-hmm. And I think I agree. Like, it came out in 2013, and that was a good year for video games in general, because that was also the year that BioShock Infinite came out. Mm-hmm. The year before that, Journey came out. Like, it was just 2012 and 2013 in general is just
Mass
a really
Effect
good year
3?
For a game. Was that 2013 as well?
2012.
2012. Okay.
Oh, my bad. Day before, or year before.
Day before.
Day before.
Jerica's
I'm getting
a big
tired.
Mass Effect fan as well.
Oh yeah. Big Mass Effect fan.
Quick side tangent. I can't get into the series. I have to keep trying it though. I've only played a little bit of the first one, but everyone tells me it's good after the first. Like, the first one has a good story, but the gameplay suffers.
I did the same thing. Have you played any of the other ones? Just jumping
Not
in.
Yet.
That's what I did. I put it down for like years, and then we had a friend that was really convincing, and it ended up being a game I played multiple times, like 1 through 3 multiple times.
I will have to, because I was playing one on stream. I was playing Mass Effect 1 on stream, and I think I need a knot, because it's a lot harder to focus, especially during the cutscenes. I feel like that I have to talk to the people watching the stream versus focusing on the cutscenes, you know? So I might try to play it in my spare time, but I have a bunch of other stuff I have to work on for the show. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about now the gameplay and the overall aesthetic. I think gameplay would be a good place to end. So let's just kind of talk about visually about the game, you know, the music, the sound. I used to kind of split this up, but I find just kind of talk about the aesthetic as a whole is a lot more easy to talk, like to have a conversation about, versus focusing on just one aspect of its aesthetic. The composer for this game is Gustavo. Hold on, I'm gonna double check. Gustavo Santiago. I'm butchering his name, but he did a fantastic job on this soundtrack. One of the things I like is that he chose a very bizarre instrument, and he has a very empty sound to a soundtrack. He's not trying to fill it with this big brass or, you know, this big orchestral sound or this hard rock sound. It has a very kind of like empty world, melancholic feel, for lack of a better term. It doesn't even have to be about the music. What's your guys' opinions on the overall aesthetic, like visuals, the music, like everything?
I don't know. Anytime I hear guitar strings or like stringed instruments, if it's just like a single like chord or whatever, I just think about The Last of Us. Like, just simple, clean. It feels like literally like if I'm sitting in a room, just open a window and like play the guitar. That is the aesthetic. Like, that's all you need. It's empty room.
And I think that fits the overall aesthetic of the game in general. I think it all comes together very nicely.
It's simple. Like, it's like you said, it's not trying to fill a room with all types of. I'm losing my train of thought here. You get
no,
what I'm saying?
You're good.
Yeah.
It's already like 9 o'clock. It's late. Well, it's like 8 o'clock for you. It's a late night.
Yeah.
I will say one thing I really liked in terms of visual aesthetic is how they designed the world. because one of the inspirations for it that I saw in their documentaries, they were talking about how they try to make the world feel accurate to what would happen if humanity just stopped. Mm-hmm. What if humanity could not continue to push nature back to so that we can maintain our current society, right? So they talked about, there's a documentary called The World Without Us that they referenced for this. Mm-hmm. And they were talking about how if people stopped pumping water out of the subway in New York, New York would be flooded in like 2 or 3 days. Like, that's how fast it would happen. And so what they would do is they would talk about, like, okay, so or they would speculate, okay, there's going to be a lot more water in cities because now we're not pumping it out. Like, everything's kind of all coagulating here. So things are going to burst and you're going to have water where it didn't used to be. Well, now this water is just sitting there stagnant, right? And now it's going to create little tiny ecosystems within these little puddles and these little ponds that show up. And there's going to be new life that forms out of it. And that's also why you see trees sprouting up around it. And they talk about how just that simple fact of water being introduced more into this urban landscape is good, because now they're not humans aren't pumping it out of there anymore. It just decays everything, and the water will break down the concrete eventually and cause everything to I keep using the same word, but decay and break down. So I thought they put so much care and attention not just into the visuals of it, but their specific design of those visuals. Yeah. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. 100%. I mean, I think they definitely stuck to the aesthetic all the way through, and I think that just tells again how good the game is. I think it was very well rounded, in my opinion.
They thought about everything.
Yes.
I'm always bad at talking about overall aesthetic, but is there anything that you guys want to say about the aesthetic, music, or whatnot that we haven't said already?
I don't think so. I think that it's meant to be melancholy, and I think that they do that very well. I think that you definitely feel the emotions through the visuals and the audio that you're supposed to be feeling while you play the game.
All right. So I don't really have much else to say about this game. I just kind of want to wrap it up by saying final thoughts. Like, what, how would you try to sell this game to someone who has not played it before? I can assume all of us would suggest to play it. So I think that's a silly question to ask. So I think instead I should ask, what would you do to try to get someone to play this game that has not played it before?
Make sure you're in a healthy mental state.
I would definitely. You're not wrong. Add to that too, like, hey, yeah, make sure you're in a good spot, but also, like, if you love a good movie, narrative based, you love to read, this is your chance to play a game that, or play a, what's the word I'm looking, or way I'm trying to describe it,
navigate, like, through a story.
This is in its best form. This, I know it's gonna become a TV show, HBO, but like, you won't be able to experience a story like this unless you play this game. Mm-hmm. Like, this is something that you have to interact with to get the most out of it. And it's one of the best, like, yeah, it's just one of the best stories I've ever ingested. Consumed. There we go. That's where consumed is.
Ingested. You ate it. You ate the story.
thanks.
It's not a podcast that's with us without weird noises.
You're just adjusting my listeners to your show so they can be ready for when they go over to listen to you.
And same for ours, if you're listening on our end, for sure. Definitely go check him out. Thanks for having us.
Well, thank you for joining me. Last thing I wanted to say about, for me, like, kind of like the way I would sell it, is that this game to me is very much one of the best arguments for video games are high art. That's always going to be a thing, people, especially because video games are still a relatively new medium. There's going to be a lot of pushback as like, oh, video games are just for kids. They're just, it's not art. I mean, it's art. You can't deny it because it's especially using other mediums. But is it considered high art? Does it have the same prestige as film or paintings or, music or something like that? And it's getting there. It should have been there for a while, but it's not there in like the cultural zeitgeist.
In mainstream, still, yeah.
Exactly. People still think of it as, oh, you're just wasting your time playing a game or this and that.
I mean, we still tell some of our friends and like other people we work with that are into games that like, hey, we have a gaming podcast, and they're like, oh, what you talking about? And you
talk about I feel like we've converted
Monster Energy
people.
Energy drinks and Doritos, like and Call yeah. of Duty, Fortnite.
Exactly. That's what, and that's, there's always going to be those stereotypes. And so you need games like Last of Us to break through yes. that barrier to be like, this is what games can be. And one of the examples I always like to give too is Journey from on the PS3 mm-hmm. and, you know, later on to PS4. That game, I was mentioning before, my wife doesn't play games often. She played that game because it's, you know, it's 2 hours and it's such an emotional journey. Like I still can't get over the fact that the first time I played it, where you go through this whole game, this whole journey with a complete stranger that you never speak to, you can't communicate with, you have no idea who this person is. You don't even know their username until after you beat the game. And you don't even know if it's the same person. It could have swapped out players and you didn't see because it's not labeled. So you can go through this whole game and this whole journey and with this person and build this emotional connection to someone you've never spoken to. And you can't do that in a movie, and you can't do that in music, and you can't do that in a game. Like, the only way you're going to build that emotional connection with someone afterwards is through speaking to them, versus in a game, like, you can share an experience without sharing a conversation.
Right.
You know?
That's a really good example.
And there is a really cool, it was a Reddit post or something like that, where this guy, it kind of reminded me of my wife's experience, but this, no one messaged her afterwards, but this guy had his wife play Journey, and she also didn't play games, and the player who played with her was super patient. They didn't leave her side. They just kind of stuck with her, like, showed her where all the different power-ups were and, like, let them play through the game. And then she got a message on the place on PlayStation to her PSN account saying it was an honor to walk, live, and die by your side and be reborn together, or something like that, because that's the whole story of the game. Like, you can't have those experiences outside of games, you know?
Yeah, I think that accurately describes this game as well. Like, I think that's a really good, you know, call out for anyone wanting to play it. Like, in summary, like, yeah, I mean, it's a totally different experience than you would get in most other games.
It's sad. You're right. Like, you have to be, that trigger warning is definitely needed for this
game.
Yeah,
I would agree, yeah.
But you don't get an experience like Last of Us through
a
TV show.
Yeah, it's definitely worth it, for sure. I mean, there's ups and downs, for sure, but especially, like, it's a great game. I think everyone should play, as long as you're doing okay.
Just know going in, you're gonna have it's gonna be a ride. For
yeah,
sure.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. I really enjoyed being with you guys on here.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you for joining me for this episode. That should do it for this episode, but where can the people find you online, and where can they find your podcast?
Yeah, so we are on pretty much all podcast platforms, right,
yep.
Jerrica?
Yes.
I know a lot of people listen to us on Apple Podcasts, but yeah, pretty much anywhere you can listen, it's JK Games. And then our Twitter and Instagram is where we're probably most active, and that's at JK Games Podcast. And we do live shows every once in a while. We're trying to do them like every week or every other week. But you will get notifications for that on our Instagram. But our Twitch is at JK Games Cast. And just for the people listening on our end, do you want to shout out some of your stuff before we go?
Yeah. So you can find me on pretty much all podcasting platforms. So I don't know if I'm on Pandora, but I'm on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, places. I can't think of all the others. You can follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at StillLoadingPod on all of them. You can reach out to me, StillLoadingContact@gmail.com. If you want to support the show, both my show and Kayla and Jerrica's show, JK Games, go to Apple Podcasts or whichever podcasting app you use and give it a 5-star rating and review. That helps for exposure for the show. It helps Apple's algorithm to kind of push it out for more people to find it. I have a Patreon. You can go to patreon.com/stillloadingpod. Even just $1 a month will help grow the show. Do you guys have a Patreon at all?
Not yet.
No.
Okay. Well, I don't make any money off mine, so you're not missing out. I have a friend who's very nice, and he gives me $1 a month, and aww. I'll take that over nothing. But probably the most important shout out I have is the Bit by Bit Foundation. The Bit by Bit Foundation is a nonprofit organization whose mission is to put video games and video game consoles in the hands of children receiving inpatient care at hospitals.
Aww.
If you want to check that out, go to their website, bitbybitfoundation.org, and consider donating.
That's awesome.
My friend started the charity. He's a really, I actually should have him on the show. I should do an episode with them. Why haven't I done that yet? I shout them out every freaking episode and I don't ever like mention them. I don't ever have them on. I should do that. But anyway, that will do it for this episode of the Still Loading Podcast and the JK Games Podcast. Jerrica, Kayla, thank you so much for joining me.
Yes. Bye.
Yeah. Thank bye. You.
And that will do it. I will see you all next time.
We'll be right back.